Welcome to Witchlit, a place to talk about the craft of writing and writing the craft. I'm your host, Victoria Rashke, author, publisher, witch, and nosy Scorpio. Witchlit is brought to you by Thousand Bolt Press, a family-owned independent publisher established to produce the books we want to see in the world. Titles including Changing Paths by Yvonne Abreu, Conjuring the Commonplace by Lane Fuller and Corey Thomas Hutchison, and my latest book, Verona Green, can be purchased directly from thousandvoltpress.com or wherever you buy books. Theo Gaudet Parma is a Balinese Australian witch, international teacher, and magical mentor. Theo is a co-founder of the Coven of the Wildwood. They are a midwife and initiate of the Wildwood tradition, as well as an active initiate of reclaiming an Anderson fairy. And they have authored or co-authored 6 previous books, including Elements of Magic and Magic of the Iron Pentacle. Their latest book is The Witch Belongs to the World, A Spell of Becoming, out from Llewellyn Now. Theo Gaudet Parma, welcome to Witchlit.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And Fiona and I touched a little bit before, and usually we jump right into our first question, but we're going to do things a little differently this time. And Theo is going to do an acknowledgement of country, and then I'll do a more kind of North American land acknowledgement.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. So first, what I do is I turn up to my breath and I'm aware that I'm breathing. And I consider how I'm being breathed by the place, being breathed by what here in so-called Australia we call country, which is more than just like the way people think of land or resources or rivers or sky. It's the deep, poignant interconnection of all of this, especially for First Nations peoples whose land I live in, whose stolen, occupied land I live in. I live in the Gadigal and Bidjigal. I live in Gadigal and Bidjigal country. Right now, the whales are coming back down from carving up in the Great Barrier Reef. I remember them and how they sing the song lines of the ocean. I remember especially right now, I remember Indigenous peoples everywhere. And I hope that in every little thing I think and do and say that I can be ever more in solidarity with their resistance to colonization and empire and to justice and truth and treaty, especially recently here where the vast population of Australian citizens voted no in a referendum to include First Peoples in our illegitimate, in my opinion, constitution, and to establish a voice, an Indigenous voice to our parliament, so that last weekend was shut down, which is devastating. I acknowledge the elders past and present. I acknowledge all the old people, all the spirits of country who form its sanctity.
Thank you. And I wanted to add that I live and record this podcast on Tamian Nation unceded land, as well as the historical land of the Ohlone. Both tribes are recognized by the state of California. Both tribes are not recognized by the United States government, which they are currently working on. And both tribes offer an opportunity and I think an obligation to pay rent for those of us who live here through their websites. And if you go to native-land.ca, you can find out in North America where you live and see if your local tribe also offers that opportunity. Theo, thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
So I thoroughly enjoyed your book, and unfortunately I did not get to do the thing that you suggested to let it marinate in between reading sessions. I had to kind of power through so I could have it finished for our talk today, but I'm looking forward to spending more time with it. But our first question before we jump into all of that, for everyone, I think especially now, and I usually talk about this in terms of like current media, but maybe now in terms of like everything going on in the world, why still write books?
I asked that question while I was writing this book. I guess for me, if I think, I just think about me, I couldn't not do it. And I actually ummed and ahed about this particular project for years. And I thought a lot of self-deprecating thoughts, which maybe a lot of writers feel, which is like, why? And also, why would anyone care? And other people have written lots of books. Why me? Why this book now? Like, I was like going through it. And then I had a reading from an astrologer friend of mine who was like, you need to write a book this year or you'll never do it. It's the book that you've been thinking of. And I was like, yes, okay. So I guess I'm trying to say that I did it because I'm a witch who exists in a world where I still feel inspiration and where I still feel, and I'm a witch who writes, and I still feel a sense of pressure from the spirits, and I still feel a sense of internalized pressure from maybe even promises I made in the past. And potentially as well, books are these precious and provocative, they can be provocative, kind of missives, invitations, love letters that are sent out into the world when things are so complicated and crunchy and hard that they actually end up being like soft landing places for people. And so books feel already nostalgic. And so I'm like, let's participate in kind of gathering up each other in some softness, because reading for me, I'm 35. Reading for me is like this thing that now I look and go, I mean, I read all the time. I read books all the time, but I'm like, this feels nostalgic. And I want to keep participating in allowing books and reading to not feel so nostalgic and for it to feel more relevant.
I think that for me, there's definitely nostalgia. I mean, I was the weird kid under the blanket with the flashlight. You know, it's probably why my eyes are so bad.
Yeah, me too.
But I'm here in the U.S., I mean, and I know this is making international news, so I'm sure you've heard about the massive swath of book bans and people who don't want their children to read about Black and brown people or queer people or history.
Or history.
You know, and I saw a thing, I think this morning, actually just leaking through the news, that in the midst of this, there's also been this dearth of reading. Like, the number of adults who say that they've read a book in the last year has dropped in the US.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it just makes my heart sink, because I feel like that, you know, to me, the magic of the book is to be able to transmit the thoughts of one person and their, you know, their being or their soul or their souls or however you think about it into the future, right?
Yeah.
To save that information. And I just, like, when I saw that, like, my heart just dropped to think that, are we really losing reading as a culture?
Yeah, I hope not. But yeah, I think that there's so many exciting books of many kinds coming out. One of the most exciting books I read recently was not an occult book. It was written by a non-binary trans mask author. And it was just this beautiful book of memoirs. Like a memoir book that was full of essays. And I just think there's so many exciting ways to write now that are very just distinctly beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. And for you, like, one of the things I loved how you talked about in the book, for folks who haven't read it, I mean, I think this book has two threads in it, at least for me as a reader. There's the thread of, like, you know, becoming a witch and the process of that. But then there's also you. I mean, there's the thread of you through the whole book. It's not just a, like, sterile approach to this. Like, you share your own stories and your own heartbreaks and love and all of those things. So one of the things you do talk about in that thread that is you, they're not really separable either. I should make that clear. The threads aren't separate. But it's like the process of actually writing the book. I mean, you talk about that several times in the book about while I'm writing this, this is what's going on, or this is how I set myself up for the day. So do you want to talk a little bit about that, like living the writing of a book maybe?
So I wrote this book in a very strange way, like the first draft, which was so again, this astrologer friend of mine was like, you need to do this thing. And if you don't do it now, you'll never do it. And I was like, fuck. It was within the next 3 days for sure. I was like, okay, well then I am going to make myself do it. And so the time lord of that year, so in like it was an traditional astrological kind of view where that year I was turning 33, and that was that my was a 10th house year. And the ruler of my 10th house is Scorpio. The ruler of Scorpio is Mars. My Mars is in Aries. And so, and it's in the third house, which is a publishing house. So she was like, okay, you need to do it. And I was like, okay, well, Mars is, you know, strategic and just does things. And my Mars in Aries just does things. So I'm going to do it now, which is also classic Mars in Aries. And I said to myself, I'm going to write every day, just I'm going to spit this out in 45 days. And I did. And I sat down every night and I made myself, which is like, it was kind of intense. I made myself write between 1,000 to 2,000 words a night. It was during a time in which I was, my partner and I at the time in this very apartment, we were in lockdown. It was like 2021. And yeah, I just wrote it out and it was like, you know, very raw. And I had to go through multiple drafts as you do, but that first 45 days was like quite exhilarating, but also because I promised and I swore it on certain relationships with certain gods, I was also annoyed because I had to do it. And so like, it would be like 2 a.m. I'm a bit of a night owl. It would be 2 a.m. and I would be still up and I'd be like, oh, I better go write. But because I often leave things until the night. Mm-hmm. I was also born at night. That makes sense too. Like I just kind of leave things till then. Anyway, it was really beautiful to come to this exact table or over behind me and just be like either standing or sitting, aligning my souls, and then maybe lighting some candles in some shrines and praying for inspiration and then just doing it. And that's the other thing. I have a dear friend, Jane Meredith, who I teach with, write books with, edit books with. And she once said to me, Theo, you know, hairdressers can't just decide, you know, we could argue that hairdressers are people who are artists. They are. And they can't just decide that they can't go to work one day because they're not inspired. They actually just have to go. And if you're a writer, sometimes you just have to go to the desk. You just have to go to your computer. You just have to go to your book. And you just have to write. And so I took a leaf out of Jane Meredith's kind of book of life and I did that. It's very different. Is it different? Like, I actually can't recall. I wrote my first book when I was 16, 17, and it came out in 2009. So there was definitely some years between that. But I kind of probably wrote that in a similar way in bursts, but over months, like... Yeah. So I don't know. That's kind of how I did this.
Yeah. Jane has been on the show and I so enjoyed talking with her. So folks who've listened from, you know, the get go will have gotten some lovely advice from Jane as well. Mm. I when you said, you know, I wrote my first book when I was 16 or 17 and I think, okay, so in common terms, we would call that like a prodigy thing to do. Write a book so early. And I think there's been a lot of conversation about, and I think this centers around like the social media-ness of like witchcraft and magic right now. Sure. But there's a lot of people who come immediately to this path and they're a teacher. You know, there's like no step between opening the door and then telling someone else what to do.
Sure.
Or trying to instruct someone else what to do. Looking back on like that work you did as 16, like how do you process that? Like that your own arc from that time?
I like many people, I don't think this is unusual, who is a witch now. I knew really, well, I can only speak for myself. My experience was when I was 11, I knew I was a witch. It kind of just dawned on me in a way. It wasn't without context, but it did kind of just dawn on me. And I just went for it. And anyone who knows me in my personal life knows that when I go for something, I just go for it. Mm-hmm. And so I just became obsessed. I still am. And I fully dove in, and I knew it was me. Like, everything I was reading, I read anything and everything, fiction or nonfiction, that had anything to do with witches. I was trying to find my witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of that for me as a kid who wrote a lot was writing. So I would write and write and write and write in books. And like, I wouldn't listen to most of my teachers in high school. Like, I'd be like writing while they were talking. I still somehow managed to get good grades and things, but I was just like just writing all the time, reading witchcraft books under the desk. At a certain point, you know, my teachers would check me in year 9 and 10, but in year 11 and 12, I did pretty much not care anymore about like what I was learning in high school, because I was quite sure of where I was going. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's true. That's where I went. I knew I wanted to write books about the craft. I knew I wanted to be deeply involved, not just on my own and with the spirits, but with the interconnected movements. And I became very involved. I became involved in interfaith for a while too, with Parliaments of the World Religions. I was briefly involved for a few years with the Church of All Worlds, da da whatever, da 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 da. But for me, I look back on that time and I realize what I was doing was I was working it out. Like, it was the book that I wrote back then. It's out of print now as of a few years ago, but it was called Spirited: Taking Paganism Beyond the Circle. And it ended up winning the Coalition of Visionary Resources Award that year. And it was a book that when I have looked at it again as this person, I was like, I go, oh my God, Theo, like, you did good. Like it's a book that surprises me to this day. Like, I read pieces of, I can't bring myself to read the whole thing. I kind of can't bring myself to read any of my whole books, but maybe that's normal. But I'll like open to things and I'll read 3 pages of something and I'm like, wow, holy shit. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I guess I look back at that book and think, wow, you really became a writer then. And I'm pretty proud of that teenager. I was very serious. I still am serious. I was probably more serious then. I think I'm more playful now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was working it out. And certainly by the time that book came out in 2009, it was early 2009, I had already been teaching the craft for 2 years, like in both in like private covens and in public, pagan gatherings. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it also helped me to realize that I was a teacher, and not all people who write pagan and witchcraft books do that, but actually for me it's like probably more than writing, it's like my main vocation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think about like the I think in historically getting published really young, you know, all that, wasn't that unusual? Like, our concept of adulthood was different a little bit.
Yeah.
But I think about now, like, people like, you know, at 16, like, how are you publishing a book? How are you having thoughts that translate into that? But just having read your work, like, I guess I'm unsurprised, maybe. Mm. And I think part of that is that you, there's not a great word that I can think of, at least in English. I'm sure some other language has the perfect word, but it's like, when I read your work, it's just you talking. I don't know how to describe it. Embodied is not the right word, right?
Yeah.
It's, you're definitely teaching as you write, but I think you're also like, one of the things I was thinking the whole time I was reading the most recent book is that you're weaving. Like, that was just the thing that came to mind over and over again. It's like,
yes.
It's almost like weaving the reader into the tapestry that you've already created.
Yes.
And it's remarkable. I mean, it's not really a question. It's just a comment.
Yeah. You know, I think what's interesting is a comment you just made reminded me that actually culturally in places like a lot of Southeast Asian cultures, it is not that unusual for young adolescents to realize that they're Buddhist monks or to realize that they mm-hmm. need to go study with a Hindu priest. Like that kind of awareness does seem to happen, like in my father's culture, quite early for some people. I mean, it would probably still not be considered that normative, but it's not unusual. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because people are more embedded in sensuous living culture. And there's a strong understanding that it's not just this one, like it's not just this reductive individual who's doing anything. And mm-hmm. so even back then, I had a strong understanding that it wasn't just me, you know, it was like a whole constellation of spirits. Mm-hmm. And so as a spirit worker, I just lean into that and we write together and we weave together. And so when I write, I often allow, it's not even exactly like I'm doing transpossession, which is a practice I have, but like it's that I'm allowing a whole kind of something to kind of erupt out of me. And that's kind of how I approach a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. It's funny you describe that. I've described fiction, that writing it is like channeling. Mm. Because I feel like, you know, I was like, well, you know, and I think there's always that question, how do novelists come up with these whole stories? And I was like,
sure.
I don't know that I invent it. I mean, I got, it depends on how you look at it, but I always feel like I'm just the conduit to tell this story.
Yeah.
Almost. And it's not, I don't know what's going to happen, like any more than anybody reading. Like until I get to the end, I don't know what it's going to be.
So. Yeah. I think I think there are definitely different ways of thinking and approaching writing nonfiction, but I think I'm not so much holding this like standard binary either between fiction and nonfiction mm-hmm. in terms of the style of writing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm often like, you know, I feel like I'm writing nonfiction like that, like what you just said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw this recently, and again, the source amnesia of living in the 21st century. It's like basically I'm no longer delineating between fiction and nonfiction. One of them is learning through story and one of them is learning through information.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay. Because I do think about like the work that, you know, I mean, I think people pick up nonfiction books because they want to incorporate that information somehow in their life. They want to learn how to do something. They want to know more about something. But I think a lot of people who read fiction have the same goal.
Yes.
And even if they don't have it, fiction tells you about other people's lives.
Yes.
And then you learn that way. I think it, you know, it develops our empathy. It does so many of those things too. So.
Yeah. One day I would like to write like a novel. It's like, I feel like that's more for my, for some reason, I'm like, that's for when I'm 50 and 60. I hope I live to that age.
Yeah, I'll have yarns to tell.
Yeah.
Well, I'll look forward in my 80s to reading your books. to reading your novels as well. So for you, like, as a reader, like, when you, like, what draws you to a book as a reader?
Yeah. Okay. So
is this truth time?
I was like you, that kid who read constantly under the covers. I'm one of those people who can read in a car or like a moving.
I'm
that person. So I did a lot, like we grew up doing a lot of long drives as you do in a continent like Australia. And I just read. And, mainly, this kind of goes back to this obsession. I would read nonfiction occult witch books. And I kind of almost cringe at myself a little bit now, But that's also like internalized judgment of peers who are like, oh, Fia, read a novel. Like, because I have some friends in my life who just like read a lot of fiction. And weirdly, I actually go around thinking that they're smarter. Like, so I have this internal judgment. This is like a weird little moment. I have this internal judgment that people who read more novels are smarter. And that people like me who read more nonfiction are kind of like just a little bit weird. Like an odd. And so I have that internalized judgment, which I'm aware of. That's not a new revelation. Mm-hmm. But lately I've been noticing that I'm more, I like to reread books. Like the other day I went to, 14 hours from here into the desert. I was there for a week and I pulled two books off my friend's shelf, like Drawing Down the Moon by Margot Adler that I hadn't read in years. I'm like, I'm going to read this book again. And like, and again, it's nostalgic for me because I'm like, I remember when I read this. and so I'll do that. But then I like to reread. One of my passions is to reread the words of people I read as a youth now and be like, what is this now? But again, I am also reading a lot more, and I have been for years really, but I tend to prioritize books by Black and Indigenous authors and queer and trans people. I tend to prioritize those perspectives. Mm-hmm. So I read books, I've been reading bell hooks again. I've been reading a lot of books by Australian or Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, mainly nonfiction. Again, I mainly read so-called nonfiction. But again, there's a lot of books that I read that are classed as nonfiction that are storytelling books. Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. I feel like bell hooks is having a bit of a moment right now. Like I think
she is again.
And yeah. I mean, obviously needed in the moment, I think too. I have been, I don't know. I think, you know, I reread, even though I think about it all the time, like, you know, I always joke that your to be read pile is still going to exist when you die. Like there's no way to read everything we want to read. But I also like to make time for rereading. And I have thing, like you said, I would like to go back and read that stuff that I felt like was formative when I read it. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those are novels for me too, but there's a lot of nonfiction in that. And then I have like comfort reads for when my brain is just cooked. Mm-hmm. And like, I just need to go somewhere I've been that I feel safe.
Yeah.
Do you have comfort reads too?
They're nonfiction books.
I know that. I mean, I think that's great. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Yeah. I do have comfort reads, and they're like these books that I'm looking at right now on my shelf that, that are like books that I got out from the Toowoomba City Library when I was like 11, 12, 13 and 14 on witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And they're books that I then went and sought out to buy, and they're really rare now. Like sometimes I look at this shelf and I'm like, and I've checked at how much some of these books are, and I'm like, oh my, I am never giving this book up.
Yeah, I have a couple of those that at the time, you know, I may have paid like $2 for it. Now, like you can't get it for love nor money. And you're like,
you know, so one of mine is Witch Amongst Us by Lois Bourne. I think I have all of Lois Bourne's books. They are very hard to find. And it was just one of the first books I ever read. And weirdly, Lois Bourne was actually one of the Bricketwood Coven's first high priestesses and like a Gardnerian, which is not a tradition. I have an intellectual fascination with all witchcraft. So I have a lot of intellectual understand. Like I can talk Wicca history with people as far as I can. Obviously, there's lots probably that I don't know. But Lois Bourne, there's a lot one could critique her for, but there's something comfy about her books for me. Mm-hmm.
Do you think having read, like from reading this book, like you talk about a lot of authors like Lois Bourne and Paul Husson, and I'm never sure how to say his name properly. Like some of these older writers that I think for a lot of folks, I'm 50. So a lot of folks my age.
What?
Oh,
you look 35.
Oh, thank you.
I'm just genuinely shocked.
I can only chalk it up to being a goth girl and good jeans. Okay. Like, I don't know what else to chalk it up to.
Holy mother.
but like I think a lot of people my age who came to witchcraft in their teens, like I came like 18, 19, right? And it was like Scott Cunningham and that group of people, like kind of, but I feel like the books that you got to first were really books that were written kind of before Cunningham.
Yes, they were.
And I'm fascinated by that. And do you think it's like changed your perspective on things? Because I think the door you walk through is always part of your lens, right?
Totally. It totally did. Like I think I've even commented on that before to people. Like the books that I came, like I remember being on forums back then and they were like, read. They were like, read Wicca, A Guide for the Solitary Practitioner and The Spiral Dance. I did not read either of those books until I was like 17. And so I had been furiously, repeatedly reading these other books by Doreen Valiente, by Paul Hewson, by Lois Bourne, by the Farrers. And so I had this like strong desire for especially what I could pick through. Like I would probably class like Gardnerian and Alexandrian Wicca as forms of traditional craft, absolutely. But there was this other thread I could see even those authors were talking about. They would constantly reference, not constantly, they would sometimes consistently reference all those authors, traditional witches, as if they were something else. Even then, Lois Bourne even talks about becoming this witch would attend the coven she was in, and later she revealed herself to be from another group, and they were there checking out Gardner, which is a common story that a lot of the early Gardnerian high priestesses have. Every single published Gardnerian high priestess will always talk about another witch lineage, another witch group. They they even kind of base some of their legitimacy on that connection. And so I was always like hunting that. I was like, what is that? Because some of the ways in which I didn't necessarily, well, there was a part of me that probably went, oh, that's older and more authentic. Of course, I'm not going to deny that.
I mean, I think, it's just kind of wired into the suit. Right?
Yeah. But there's this other part that the pieces that were connected to those witches, they sung to me more. They sung to me more than knives and chalices. They sung to me more than this idea of like being naked in a circle. Like, I was like, oh, that's interesting. They sung to me more than a high priest and a high priestess and a kind of goddess of fertility and they just sung to me more than that. And because even those authors were making those statements, they were like, this is different. This is different. And I was like, well, what is that? Because that sings to me. So so it definitely did color my lens, and I hunted that. I found it. I did. That's what I ended up discovering. Those forms of the craft and becoming inducted into them. There are many forms of the craft. And then I'm also deeply involved in another tradition, reclaiming, which has roots in Anderson Fairy, which has roots in this like American traditional folkloric form of the craft, but is also very contemporary and deeply influenced by Wicca. So it has like deep influence by fairy and Wicca in a way. Like I have this huge, vivid relationship with the Charge of the Goddess, which really I have because I'm a reclaiming witch, because the Charge of the Goddess is so foundational for us as well.
I think about that, what you said earlier about like having just that, like a, voracious intellectual interest in magic and just reading. And I always think about that too, because I'm that way as well. Like, I just want to read everything. Like, I want to know, I want to see it. And, I always joke that it's really easy when your brain works that to become like an armchair witch, like that you are always in the theoretical and not in the practice. So how do you bridge that for yourself?
I guess it was also like back to this obsession thing. Cause I knew that it wasn't just reading. Like I was like, well, I am a witch and thus I will do witchcraft. Like, and so I just, I actually don't know how to answer that really properly or methodically, because I'm like, well, I was just doing it. Like I would be like, okay, the book says this, I'm going to try it. And then I would put the book away and I would start to just figure it out and learn directly from the spirits, learn through a lot of trial and error, learn from folklore. Like, I was also that kid who was listening to these older authors going, read nursery rhymes, look into folklore and myth, because that's what they were all saying. And so I would. And I would ask questions of my family and the things they kind of, like the folklore they knew about. And I guess also because I was already in a family that practiced spirit work and divination and mediumship and transpossession, it was very easy to go, well, that's how that looks. I'm already in it. So then how do I discover the craft as I desire it? And so I don't really know. I just kind of, it is in my nature to act on things. Yeah.
That Mars and Aries.
Yeah. Mars and Aries. Moon and Scorpio.
Oh, me too.
It's like deep, like just act on it, like get into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and yeah. I think for me, I've talked about this some on the show, and I've talked about this with people who know me, is there was this like gate in my brain about like legitimacy, about my writing, about witchcraft, about everything, like this, what is real and what is just, you know, me pretending, kind of like you said, like, who am I to do this? Like, who am I to do this thing? And then weirdly, the thing that unlocked the gate for me was cooking. Because I went to culinary school, you know, I got trained, I did all this stuff, and then realized that I kind of hated the whole culinary industry. Like, I just didn't want to be part of it.
Yeah.
And I was like, but why am I drawn to this? And it wasn't because I wanted to recreate these things. It was because I wanted to like take all of these things and make them mine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think that, and finally realizing that as much as I had struggled against it and said I couldn't do this, that I was a writer first.
Yeah.
And then all of those things kind of wove together. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is just, it is what it is. And I really love the idea of looking at, you know, looking at all of the stuff that other people have read or have written, and remembering that at some point they either had to find it or make it up.
Yeah.
Right. And so that leaves room for us to find our own pace and how to do things our way. And
yeah.
And it is not prescriptive.
No, not at all. Yeah.
That's one of the things I also really loved about your book, is that's really how you approach it to you. I mean, you give people a framework to work through these things, but at every stop on that path, you're like, what is this for you? What is this thing for you?
Yeah, definitely. And there's many kind of things that have helped me get there, actually. And one of the ways that helped me get there is teaching the craft, because you quickly realize, and I teach a lot publicly, Zoom courses, like I teach a lot on Zoom even before the pandemic. I was like, this is like when the pandemic happened, which is awful. I was like, everyone was like, Zoom, what's Zoom? And I was like, oh, was not everyone on Zoom? I've been on Zoom for several years. So what I discovered was, along the way, through a lot of mistakes and, you know, continue to make them, is that, yeah, this is the best thing to do, really, is to present something as clearly and as thoroughly as you can, to model it, to allow, to kind of facilitate a felt sense experiential thing for someone. And then to be like, you know, and check in, how is this for you? What is this pinging for you? You know, journal, reflect, dance, sigh, draw. There's always places along the way when I'm teaching like a day intensive, a weekend intensive, whatever, where we just stop for 10 minutes and we just are in silence, or people are drawing or writing to reflect, to actively reflect, but also kind of just to be. And I always try my best to like say, you could sit and meditate, you could stretch, you could journal if you're a voracious journaler. So I'm just trying to hit all of the options for people, even though I'll never be able to, but I'm trying to like be like, here's a litany of things you could do right now. And hopefully you realize that you can do whatever you want by me saying, here's 10 options, you know. And so I tried to, I guess if anything, not that this is a question you're asking, but I'll say this. One of the things that is slightly frustrating me about, because obviously when you write, you want to hear like what people are thinking and feeling about the book. But the way I wrote this book is that a lot of people are like, oh, but Theo, I'm taking it really slow. Like, like, I love it, but I've only read two chapters because you have constantly said, like, take it slow and stop and consider this for a month. And I'm like, God damn it. And so, but I love that people are taking it so seriously. Like, I've already heard back from a number of people going, oh, I'm doing this with my coven over the next year. And one of the things, there are people who've read the book, obviously, but so one of the things that I heard recently from someone who I think is in her 50s, maybe she's in her 60s, witches are often looking very young. She said to me, she didn't say it to me. She wrote a review when I read it. And because I kind of know her through community, I was like, ah, she lives in Texas. Anyway, she basically wrote this amazing long review that was like, oh my God, you get it. I was like, you get it. And then she was like, I have basically just questioned everything I knew about witchcraft. And I was like, whoa, like that is such a compliment. And I feel like that is so why I wrote this book, not to make people like doubt their practice at all, but to be like, there are living histories that are mythopoetic, but just as impactful on the day-to-day reality of things that people often miss out on or sideline or dismiss. One of those things is the witch blood. That can really, if we're not looking at that in like a more mythopoetic way, which I really try to establish in this book, it can be a horrible thing to think about. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people can go all strange places, which people do. But I'm one of those people that likes to not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, I'm like, no, there's stuff here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of rich stuff here. And the other thing is that it is also an established idea in a lot of traditional craft. So like, why is that? Like, let's get into mm-hmm. that. And also the fallen angels and how that's linked. Why is that an established idea as well? And so I've gone on my own journeys with a lot of this, but it's not that my conclusions, if they are conclusions at all, are actually just mine. They are not just mine. So the idea even of like the angels who fell in love, that's not unique to me. Like, I think I say that in there as well, but mm-hmm. it's like, I kind of try to extend it into, well, how does this relate to your heart or heartbreak? Or how does this relate to, you know, the idea that you are like an animal that has passion? Like, how does that relate to that?
Yeah.
Because I just don't want like, to have any kind of, I basically am so passionate about the craft being alive for people.
Well, I think that's important. And I love that you said that, because I think it is easy to look at things, you know, we're at whatever age you're at, if you've been doing something for a while, that you kind of set this pattern, right? And you have these ideas like, this is, I have found the craft. This is my thing. And I really love the idea that we continue to evolve, that our craft continues to evolve as long as we are here breathing, and maybe after we're not breathing. I also like to think about that. But that it isn't set in amber. Like, it should be alive. It should grow and change and incorporate new information and all of that stuff too. So I love that that's like at the basis of this book, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. So, unfortunately, Fiona and I both have a time thing today. Mm-hmm. So, Fiona, before we do our last little game of chance question, which our, you know, Scorpio moon hearts hopefully will love, I want to give you an opportunity to kind of talk about what's coming up. This will air in January, February. So, like, what's up for you in 2024? Where can people find you? Like, all that good stuff. Plug away.
Yeah, so, I mean, 2024 is already looking like one of those years that I'm going to have to catch up with myself. But I have two books coming out. So I have actually a reissue of one of my books, Ecstatic Witchcraft. It's coming out with new material, new foreword. But through Crossed Crow Books, which is this fabulous kind of new occult publishing house based in I believe Chicago. And then also a book with Jane Meredith again, like our third book together. So that's exciting. Through Llewellyn. And then also I'll be traveling again back to the so-called US in the middle of 2024, teaching, doing stuff. I was there also this year. I was like, wait, what year are we in? I was there this year for 6 weeks. You know, I'm always teaching online. So, and always teaching in person too. Like, so if people are interested in working kind of like through many months with different kinds of material, whether it be like I've taught about the Fallen Angels, like in 6 months before, or I do three-month courses on working with the great ones / deities. Like I do like 4 week spellcraft courses, whatever. Like if people are interested in like kind of doing that kind of work via Zoom, then they can, it's there. I actually started writing another book on the train the other day. It was a 14-hour train. And it was a book that I promised one of my gods a long time ago. I was like, I'm going to write this book for you. And so I've never written a book about like a singular deity. And this is that book. And it's like, I'm very scared of writing this book because I'm like, this is like a book about you. But of course it will be about my relationship with her, but it's also going to be, there's a lot to say historically about her. Mm-hmm. So I'll be doing that. Hopefully I hope I can do that. That's some of it.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
You're a very busy person.
Yeah, apparently.
So our last question is a little bit of a game of chance. And I always joke, as Scorpio, I'm Scorpio sun and moon. But I don't know how to do small talk because that's just not how my brain works.
Yeah.
So I always like to talk about the stuff we're not supposed to talk about. And depending on what I roll in this little purple die,
great.
You'll get a question about death, sex, religion, politics, or money.
Great. And
if I roll a 6, you get to pick which one you want.
Okay.
And you can say pass.
Okay.
So 6, you get to pick.
Politics.
Oh, okay. So as Fiona and I are recording this, the world is basically on fire, as it has been for a few years.
Yes, for centuries.
Yeah, I think like for me, I think a lot about what is the political responsibility of a witch. And one of the reasons I think about that a lot right now is because I feel like the trend of witchcraft is this kind of spicy self-care wellness that's very inward focused.
Yeah.
Which is not in and of itself a bad thing.
No, it's not.
But I feel like there's more. So what do you think the political responsibilities are of a witch?
Of a witch. Oh, well. It's gonna look different on different people, but I believe that the political responsibilities of a witch are to be a witch, which is that we are disruptors, I believe. I believe historically, culturally, metaphysically, we are disruptors, we are provocateurs, we are transgressive. So therefore, we need to, in a variety of ways, both hidden and not at all hidden, hidden in plain sight perhaps, we need to be actively dismantling and critiquing the systems of what Starhawk would say is power over, the systems of domination, coercion, and control is how I would kind of expand that. And directly, I often say that witches are the enemies of empire, and I firmly believe that. I know that there's a ton of people who disagree with that on me, but I firmly believe it to be true, and that empire is not good for anyone, I guess, except the emperor. But even then, and so I believe that we need to critique imperialism, that we need to, I mean, this is back to bell hooks, you know, what she articulated as, I can never remember the order completely, but, you know, white supremacist, capitalist, imperialist, patriarchy. which is just a really clever way of saying, here are these intellect systems of domination, coercion, and control that hurt everyone and everything. And they live inside of us. We have been totally indoctrinated and we've internalized all of these things. And witchcraft can be, the political responsibility of which can be the active, like, constant, diligent, passionate, poetic unraveling and dismantling of that. And witches are meant to, we're meant to blast the crops. We're meant to hex and, like, bring down the lords in their towers, as it says in the Aradia. We're meant to do that. Now, that doesn't mean that every individual witch will be doing cursing work. Every individual witch's magic is different. But I do think that we need to stop, because still that debate goes on. I think it's ridiculous, but we need to honor really clever ways of cursing. We need to honor really clever ways of healing, understanding that often they end up being the same.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so also a lot of witches in the so-called West need to remember that magic is real and to stop dismissing it. I actually see a lot of witches, published witches too, kind of like dismissing magic. And I'm like, that's really odd. so do magic. Do mm-hmm. magic. And remember how that enacts. How does that extend into your political responsibility? Because if you're doing magic, then it needs to also extend and activate those political responsibilities of confronting empire in its small forms and its large forms. And also, it's too overwhelming to confront it in its large forms. So just, I guess, I invite people and myself to confront it in the immediate surrounding. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's having a really, like, kind of complicated conversation with your uncle or auntie or your parents or your friends. And sometimes it's about going to rallies and protests. And sometimes it's about writing a book. And sometimes it's about doing magic with your coven. And sometimes it's about laying down and resting. Because we're all taking different, we're all doing different things mm-hmm. at different times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I follow lots of other podcasters on social media. And in the last couple of days, the lovely people of Bonfire Babble podcast posted this thing about that witches are in a chorus. And that part of being in a chorus is you don't all take a breath at the same time. So that means you take a breath while someone else sings.
I love that.
The idea of that, of like, this is how we do the work. This is how we do the work, is sometimes you have to take a breath. You know?
Mm-hmm. That's true. It's true.
I feel like I could talk to you for days and days and days. So
yeah,
really
we have
want
a lot
to,
of Scorpio linkings.
I know. So I really want you to come back and let's talk more another time. One of the joys of this podcast and Zoom is that we can be on different sides of the planet, or at least different sides of Pacific, and talk mm-hmm. to each other. The other challenge is timing. So, let's definitely do it again.
Yeah, I would love that.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Witchlit is a production of Thousand Volt Press and is edited by Julian Rashke. Our intro music is Cosmic Glow by Andrew Kay, and our outro music is Voices by Alexander Shenankar. Transcripts and all our previous episodes are available at witchlitpod.com, and you can follow us on Instagram and Threads at witchlitpod. Please help other witches find us by leaving a rating or review wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening to and reading Witchlit.